Hi, I'm Mike Evans. Welcome to this AAT podcast, which today includes slides to accompany my talking. Please change slides when you hear this sound. Today's podcast is a follow-up to an earlier one on preparing for payroll year end. This podcast is specifically about completing and submitting payroll year end returns. In this podcast, we will concentrate on the completion and submission of the end-of-year pay-as-you-earn returns. The main pay-as-you-earn returns are the P35 Employer's Annual Return and the P14 End-of-Year Summary and P60 Certificate for Employees that have to be completed for each employee for whom a P11 Deductions Working Sheet has been completed during the year. We will also look at the completion of the P38A Employer Supplementary Return and the P38S for student employees. Let me begin by reminding you again about the 2008-09 payroll year-end deadlines that you need to be aware of and to make a note of. 17th of April is the date for payment of any outstanding pays you're in a national insurance, because the 19th of April statutory date is on a Sunday. Electronic payment date, 22nd of April. The key date in terms of submission is the 19th of May 2009 deadline for submitting the P35, P14s and the P38A. And we have, by extra statutory concession B46, an additional 7 days, taking us to midnight on Tuesday the 26th of May, indeed after the Whitsun Bank holiday. I will always advise AAT members to work to the statutory deadline and not rely on those extra 7 days, except in cases of emergency. The 31st of May 2009 is the deadline for employees to be provided with a paper P60 showing them details of their pay and tax. It is important to remember that it has to be a paper P60 and it isn't good enough to email them an electronic version. 6th of July is the deadline for the P11Ds, P9Ds and the P11DB, and the same date for third-party benefit notices. 6th of July again is the date for having a signed PAY settlement agreement to deal with the taxable expense payments and benefits in kind, which haven't been put through the payroll or reported on Form P11D. The 17th of July or 22nd of July for electronic payments, the effective date of payment of the Class 1A National Insurance contributions, and then my question mark on the 31st of August 2009 for submitting PAY settlement agreement calculations to the revenue. And finally, the 19th or 22nd of October for payment of any PAY settlement agreement, tax and Class 1B National Insurance. So now that we're ready to complete and submit the end-of-year pay-as-you-earn returns, we have to decide whether we're going to do this online or by paper. Remembering, of course, that employers with more than 50 employees must submit the PAY returns, the P35 and the P14s at least. They must submit them online. Online filing is quick and easy, and we will again this year receive £75, which is the last of the incentive payments for submitting the PAY returns online. Except, of course, employers with more than 50 employees have got to do it and don't get the incentive payment. Let's have a look at doing it online before we get into the detail of completing and submitting the actual forms themselves. Step one is simple, it's to log on to the internet on our computer. And step two is we'll get onto the HMRC website at www.hmrc.gov.uk. And next we click on Pay As You Earn for Employers from the Do It Online menu on the left-hand side. So there on the slide is that website page, and you can see on the left-hand side, do it online, or at the top there, the other option of online services. So we enter into the online website and come to the welcome page again. So now we're going to put in our user ID and password if we're already registered, and then log in. go over to the next page, and you can see on the left-hand side, the basically in blue, I've got a copy of the website where it tells us to file your returns and forms, PAYE, the at a glance. You'll see highlighted in blue the file a return. So we click on file a return, then click on online returns and forms, PAYE product. HMRC advises that it is best suited for employers with fewer than 50 employees. And again, I think from recent experience, some employers have had problems with filing using the HMRC system if indeed they've had more than 50 employees on their payroll. You can view on the HMRC website a list of available third-party products, and that will help you choose a third-party software, but bear in mind we haven't a lot of time to do this. Or you can log in through your own software if you've already got this. In fact, you might have an automatic login to that and then don't have to go through the HMRC system. If you are using the HMRC software, you will be taken to your employee list. You may need to update the employee list by perhaps adding new employees that have been employed during the year and haven't been put on the list before, or by deleting employees that left in the previous tax year. You may then need to click on change the tax year to change the year to 2008-09. This is the experience that I had in recent days, which is before, of course, the end of the current tax year. And so it's defaulting to the 2007-08 tax year where I did the returns last year. So then click on end of year returns, P35, P38A, and complete the returns. Well, turning first of all to the P35 Employer's Annual Return, the paper form, P35, is a four-page form. Page 1 spelling out the employer obligations and telling you where to get help. Page 2 and 3 is a listing of directors and employees and a summary of the payments. And page 4 comprises the all-important checklist at part 3 of the form. And we have employer contracted out pensions at part 4, and the very important employer's certificate and declaration in part 5. We'll come back to that in a minute. So what do? Well, first of all, we have to list each employee for whom a P11 deductions working sheet or an equivalent, perhaps computerised record or spreadsheet, was required in the tax year that's coming to an end. If some or all of the P14s are being sent to HMRC by internet, by electronic or by magnetic media, there's no need to complete the Part 1 Summary of Employees and Directors section. If you're completing the paper form and there's more than 10 entries, you'll need to use a P35 in brackets CS, which is for continuation sheet. You can easily obtain by downloading it off the HMRC website and going on to the order line there. Well, next, what do we have to do? We have to list the directors first and mark their entries with an asterisk just to show HMRC that these people are directors. We're talking about Company Act directors here, not someone who just has a nominal name of director. We then list the employees, preferably in alphabetical order of surname or as the P14s are collated. We put the total of employees and employer national insurance contributions, class 1 contributions of course, recorded in column 1D of the P11 deduction working sheet. Then we show the tax deducted or refunded from in this employment box at the foot of column 6 on the form P11 deductions working sheet. P35 annual return page 4 checklist requires a tick in the no or yes boxes. Question 1 says, have you sent a form P14 end of year summary or completed and retained a form P38S student employees for every person in your paid employment, either on a casual basis or otherwise during the tax year shown on the front of the form? If you answer yes to this question, you will not need to do a form P38A. But if the answer is no, you're then required to send a form P38A employer supplementary return, which we'll have a look at in a moment. Question 2 says, did you make any free of tax payments to an employee? In other words, did you bear any of the tax yourself? rather than deduct it from the employee? The normal answer to this is no, and we move on. There would be an issue if the employer had agreed to bear any tax for a director or an employee. Question 3 says, so far as you know, did anyone else pay expenses or in any way provide vouchers or benefits to any of your employees whilst they were employed by you during the year? I think most employers would answer no to that question. But the point is, are you aware of any third party paying expenses for your employees or providing them with benefits or vouchers? This could apply where an employee is on secondment from abroad or an employee receives the benefit of a customer's incentive scheme. And the example I might give would be employees on the cosmetics counter in Boots or Debenhams or Harrods, where they might receive vouchers or other rewards for selling the products of the cosmetics company. The question would again be, were you aware of that benefit being provided? If the answer is yes, you have to note the form. Question 4 says, did anyone employed by a person or company outside the UK work for you in the UK for 30 or more days in a row? And in most cases, the answer will be no. If the answer is yes, the supplementary question is, if yes, have you sent a Form P14 for them? And HMRC would be expecting the supplementary question to have an answer of yes as well. Question 5 says, have you paid any of an employee's pay to someone other than the employee, for example, to a school? This is what I call the school fees question. Again, in most cases, the answer will be no, and you don't have to answer the supplementary question. However, if the employer has paid school fees on behalf of a director or employee and not in a contract between the school and the employer, then the question will be answered yes. The second question says, have you included this pay on their Form P14? And strictly, at least the Class 1 National Insurance should have been paid through the payroll. The benefit itself can be reported on a P11D. So hopefully the answer here is going to be no and nothing else. If it's yes, the second question should be answered yes. The final question is question 6, and it's about service companies. Are you a service company is what it says. And in most cases, we're going to have an answer of no. Again, there's a supplementary question. It says, if yes, have you operated the intermediaries legislation, sometimes known as IR35, or the managed service companies legislation? Which, of course, HMRC would expect the answer to be yes. But it is a fact that this question is irrelevant to most employers completing a Form P35 and of little concern, therefore, to AAT members. Form P14 is the end-of-year summary. The manual P14 is normally a three-part form comprising an orange tax copy, a green national insurance copy, and the blue P60 copy to be given to employees. A P14 must be completed for each employee that was employed in the year, including any leavers. So that's including anyone that's left before the 5th of April 2009. However, the P60 should only be given to employees that were still employed by the company on the 5th of April 2009. Where you have leavers and you're completing manual P14s, the blue copy should be destroyed and certainly shouldn't be given to employees. As we've already noted, the P60 must be given to employees by the 31st of May 2009, and I've said previously it should be a paper copy. Employees can be given copies or duplicates, but they have to be marked copy or duplicate. Next, we have to take the totals of pay and tax and national insurance contributions from the P11 deductions working sheets. And if we're completing manual P14s, we need to be careful to write legibly and to avoid pound signs and continental sevens. Basically, when you're taking the trouble to do them manually, you have to take care with the dates and the quality of the entries generally. Otherwise, there's a great danger that the forms will be read by machines and rejected. It's also important to use the correct forms if you're completing manual P14s. And I would always say to have spare copies available, because if you make any alterations or if you tip that cup of coffee over the P14, you're going to have to bin it and do another one, because otherwise they'll be rejected, which is perhaps one of the reasons why HMRC tries to encourage everyone to do this online. It's quicker, it's easier, and there's less scope for mistakes. So move on now to the slide, which is headed Common Errors to Avoid. And I just want to go through a few of these. I referred earlier on to Revenue Help in terms of looking at common errors, and the Help Book E10, in fact, has a more detailed list of common errors that are picked up. But if I just look at some of the ones that I come across, starting off with invalid national insurance numbers, such as temporary reference numbers, and there's an example there of 163T12345, or indeed temporary national insurance numbers. In the past, the temporary NINO, which would be TN for temporary number, and then the date of birth 11/06/51, and then either M for male or F for female. But temporary national insurance numbers must not be included on a P14. If we don't have a national insurance number, we have to put down the details of gender and the date of birth. We also need to be careful and try to avoid incorrect prefix or suffix letters, and watch in terms of making errors on the recording of NI earnings and contributions shown in columns 1A to 1E. It's so often the case people transposing figures from a P11 deductions working sheet when they're doing it manually is to get the figures the wrong way around. An easy mistake to make. We need someone proofreading and checking these. We also need to check the tax codes are not incorrect. The correct tax code should be the last one that was issued by HMRC. And again, you may have a situation where if someone was made a payment on leaving the employment, but after the date of leaving, the tax code will have been changed to code BR, because that's what the pay as you earn regulations require. Well, the P14 should show the final tax code that was used, not the one that was in use before the employee left the employment. Watch that the date of birth is correct. Again, with addresses, be careful about lead-in spaces and punctuation. We shouldn't have punctuation. The forename field, watch for incorrect characters. Is the right name in there? Is the name on the revenue records William, or is it Bill? Is it Dick, or is it Richard? Those sort of things. Just because we know a person as Bill or Dick, we need to be careful what's on the revenues records and put the right information in there. Again, the surname field, need to be careful to avoid incorrect characters. And particularly nowadays, many people coming from abroad to work in the UK, watch that we don't get forename and surname the wrong way around. Again, be careful of wrong pay and NI earnings figures, because these will all be rejected by HMRC. Incorrect pay as you earn reference, perhaps in an incorrect format. The example that I show you on the slide is 951/A123, not 951/923/A123. The wrong reference is typical of a reference on something like a PAYE settlement agreement or a dispensation letter from HMRC, where in the past two tax offices have merged. The ones I show you on the slide are Chapel Wharf area, where the reference should be the employer reference of 951, not the other reference of 951/923. So again, what you really want to be doing is look to the information that you've got and make sure it's the right pay as you earn reference. Take it off the yellow payslip booklet, for example. Let me now turn to the P38A employer supplementary return. And what is this? It's a supplementary pay-as-you-earn return for workers for whom you have not completed a Form P14 or Form P38S, which is the student form, for the year from the 6th of April 2008 to the 5th of April 2009. Again, I'm constantly reminding people it's an employer supplementary return. It's not a form where you put a list of payments to the self-employed. Anyone that is genuinely self-employed will be paid through the purchase system. They won't be included in the wages. They won't be included on a supplementary pay-as-you-earn return. Now, the guidance says you must complete this form if you've answered no to question one of the checklist on your Form P35 Employer's Annual Return. The checklist that we looked at earlier with C.P. Elliott, he ticked the box yes to say that all P14s or P38Ss have been done. In that case, there wasn't the need for a P38A. But where we've answered no to that question, then really we're going to need a P38A. So I hesitate to say this, but just check your facts. If you've answered no, do you really mean that? Do you really need to do a P38A? It's a form that's often overlooked by employers, I have to say. So what have we got? We've got to sign just one declaration. If a P46 is held and we've got a signed statement at A or B, and importantly, if the worker was paid less than £90 a week or £390 a month so that we didn't have deductions, then sign the one declaration, fine. Enter details in Section A for anyone paid £90 or more in any week or £390 per month, and any worker taken on for more than 1 week. A true casualist worker taken on for 1 week or less with no expectation of working again. But there we have in Section A, we'd have details of the workers paid £90 or more in any week and taken on for more than a week. Then in Section B, we've got to enter details of any worker paid more than £100 in the year and not already listed in Section A. Well, I have to say £100 is a limit that's been there for many, many years, and it's not very much. But having said that, if a casual has come in and been paid, perhaps during the school holidays, it could be a student-type person but paid in the school holidays, maybe come in and done a bit of work and paid minimum wage, and perhaps paid £40 or something for a day, 2 days in a year, £80 less than £100, not have to worry about it, paid for 3 days, it totals £120, more than £100, we then have to enter the details in Section B if they've not already been reported in Section A. Harvest workers have special treatment, and we've got guidance in CWG2, which I've reproduced for you on the next slide. So there it is, harvest casuals. For pay as you earn, we have the circumstances, the person is a daily casual, taken on for 1 day or less, paid off at the end of that period, so the end of that day, or the end of the half day, or a couple of hours, with no contract for further engagement. The action we told for pay-as-you-earn purposes, mind you, do not deduct tax, keep a record of the employee's name, address, and the amounts paid, enter these details on Form P38A at the end of the tax years requested on Form P35. Now, when we're completing these P38A returns, this is the time we're going to have to look back and see, well, what information do we have on casuals, and if they're harvest casuals, what details do we have? What names and addresses? The basic information. We've got to have names and addresses. And of course, we're going to have problems if the names are something like M Mouse, Won the Street, or D Duck, Buckingham Palace. That's asking for trouble. Moving down the guidance, if the employee is taken on for no more than 2 weeks, and this are special rules for harvest casuals, a 2 week rule as opposed to a 1 week rule for other casuals, if they're taken on for more than 2 weeks and has not been taken on previously by you since the 6th of April and paid above the pay as you earn threshold without pay as you earn being applied, what's the action? Don't deduct tax, keep a record of the employee's name, address, and the amounts paid. Enter these details on Form P38 at the end of the tax year as requested on the Form P35. Then the next one is where the employee is taken on for more than 2 weeks. No special procedures apply, so you treat them indeed as the normal rules for taking on an employee. I've said before, national insurance is different to pay as you earn. So we've got some special rules for NICs. Circumstances, the employee is employed as a regular casual, for example, taken on for a specified period and paid at regular intervals. Action, no special NIC rules, normal procedures apply. Next, we've got employees engaged on an irregular basis to work outdoors harvesting perishable crops, or is paid off at the end of each engagement, for example, at the end of the day, and has no contract for further employment. So just to emphasise that, work outdoors harvesting perishable crops is paid off at the end of each engagement, for example, at the end of the day, and has no contract for further employment. In those circumstances, NICs will not be collected where it's impossible for the employer to identify individuals and record their earnings. If the identity details are known, NICs are due when the earnings for each engagement exceed the earnings threshold, and then you work out the NICs due. Point about that is that if you've got sufficient details and if they're paid over the earnings threshold, then the NICs should be deducted and paid over and credited to their account for pension purposes. Move on now to the student form P38S. What do we say? It says that the annual return that does not have to be sent to HMRC. So that's a key thing. You don't submit the P38S forms to HMRC, which is perhaps why some employers don't bother to even get them completed. And that's a great mistake. HMRC employer compliance officers will come in, will ask about P38S procedures, and will demand to see the forms that should have been retained for 3 years plus the current year. There's no P38S form and tax wasn't deducted, we're going to have a pay-as-you-earn failure. So students who have worked during the current tax year and who have not completed P38S should be asked to complete one now. And that's the first thing that we should do as part of this end-of-year procedure. Have we paid any students without deducting tax? What evidence have we got that the students, if we haven't got them to complete a P38S so far and we can get hold of them, then get them to complete one now. Also, let's ask them to complete a new form as soon as possible after the 6th of April 2009 for any students that are working for us over the Easter period this year. Move on from there. What about students that work for us outside the holiday periods? Because the P38S only applies to students or genuine students working for you or your clients in the holiday period. A P46 may be required for a student working at other times. Last week I was in Leeds, next week I'm in Birmingham. The week after I'm in London. All towns or cities with universities. And if a student is working for an employer in a university town or city and works outside the holiday period, perhaps working in a shop on a Saturday, working in a pub in the evenings or what have you, the P46 procedure has to apply. Now, any students where we've used the P38S procedure, we've got to ask the question, have they earned more than the personal allowance limit? And was the tax code changed from no tax to code OT as is required by the regulations? So you take on a student, you have to use code NT because they sign the certificate to say they're not going to earn more than the personal allowances limit. If it turns out that they work for you more often than expected, they've earned more than expected, you should be monitoring the amount that they've paid, or your client should be monitoring the amount that they've paid, and immediately they reach the personal allowance limit, then the tax code is supposed to be changed from code NT to code OT. So at this end of year time, we just need to go through a list of the students that have been paid, look at the amount they've been paid in the year. Is there anyone where we should have deducted tax, and do we need to correct that now? It's vitally important to remember that the P38S procedure does not apply in any shape, shadow or form to Class 1 national insurance contributions. We may have a situation where the student has been paid above the lower earnings limit or even the earnings threshold, and therefore, providing the student is over the age of 16, Class 1 NICs will have been deducted or should have been deducted. The standard approach, the guidance in HMRC Helpbook E11, is to say you enter NI in the tax code box. But when it comes to the P14, the NI entry has to be removed because the only valid entry that goes into the tax code box will be NT or indeed OT if that was the last code. An NI entry will be rejected. So, in summary then, this task of submitting end-of-year returns, which is quite important, it's a once-a-year task, of course, which must not be left until the last minute. Preparation is everything, starting with monthly and annual reconciliation of deductions and payments, followed by checks on tax codes and NI category letters before the payroll is finally closed down. Pay-as-you-earn NIC regulations require employers to pay over the amounts deductible, not just the amounts deducted. So, have we failed to operate pay-as-you-earn and or deduct Class 1 NICs? And do we need to make any last-minute adjustments to ensure that the end-of-year returns are correct before we submit them to HMRC by the 19th of May 2009 statutory deadline? When we make a start on the completion of those returns, do we have all the information to hand? And if we're intended to do this online, have we already registered and activated pay-as-you-earn online? If we have done that previously, where is the username and password? And let's check out that it works before we leave it to the last minute and then find it doesn't. Remember the statutory deadlines and set yourself or your clients a realistic timetable to be able to accurately complete and submit the returns. Submitting pay-as-you-earn end of returns is an onerous but important task, and we need to prepare and exercise care. There's a lot of help out there, and there's more help to come from the AAT with the CPD master courses, which will be going around the country over March and April. I hope to see some of you there. Thank you very much for listening today.